This is not a drill. This is not a drill. General quarters. General quarters. All hands on your battle stations.
Welcome to Midrats with Sal from Commander Salamander and Eagle One from Eagle Speak at Sea or Shore, your home for a discussion of national security issues and all things maritime.
And welcome aboard, everyone. I am the aforementioned Sal, along with my co-host, the ever-genial Eagle One of Eagle Speak. We appreciate y'all taking time today to join us for another edition of Midrats. If you are with that esteemed cohort live, if you scroll down to the bottom of the show page, you will find a link to the chat room. In the chat room, you'll find the usual suspects. If you have some questions you would like to ask or some observations about the show, that is the perfect place to bring it up, and we'll be glad to roll it into the conversation as we go forward. Also, if you have to take off a bit during the show, you want to catch up on what you missed, or if you want to make sure in the future that you have every episode of Midrats available for you at your convenience, just go over to iTunes or Spreaker or any of the other podcast aggregator you may use and subscribe to the podcast. It will pay for it. It's for free, and that way we'll be there waiting for you. On to the specifics for today's show, and what may seem from the outside mildly farcical, if not silly, battle about ranks between various Pentagon power centers and a bunch of obsessed science fiction geeks about what the Air Force would call their various ranks, in reality, has a significant and serious foundation. The foundation here, I think, is the key. As culture is upstream from the performance of an organization, because that organization's culture is built upon the traditions of its founding and where those traditions that it used for its founding ultimately came from themselves. Words mean things. Titles mean things. You know, and if the most senior officer of a spaceship is captain or colonel, it has more to do with it besides aligning with a couple of centuries of art and literature that imagined and thought about the future that is now here in our present. And using their recent article titled Parochialism, Not Congress or Naval History Will Kill the Space Force, we have a couple of returning guests today for the full hour to discuss this and other related topics. That is Matt Hipple and Jack McCain. And we're going to talk about how we can talk about and adjust the culture of Space Force at the beginning and what would be the right foundation to make. Standard disclaimer as well, Matt and Jack are here just speaking for themselves. Their opinions do not necessarily reflect those of the United States Navy or any other organizations they are associated with. Matt and Jack, welcome back to Midrats.
Thanks, Sal. Super happy to be back. I think this is my third or fourth offense now. So every time I hear your intro music, I get a little bit excited inside.
Well, it's good to have a positive effect on someone out there. The question, I guess I'll roll the first question over to Jack, and then Matt, you can weigh right in there. And I would offer to the listener, if you haven't already, and you can find a link over at the show page in some of the advertisements we've done prior to the show, go read the article. Congratulations to both of y'all. You wrote a real tight article. If you're like me, you like to print stuff out and read later. If you control A, control C, control V in a text document, it's just two pages of Helvetica 12 font. That just takes a little bit to read. But I thought y'all really brought out some solid points there. And I think we ought to start the conversation. One of the things I talked about, traditions and culture. And in the opening paragraph, Jack, you and Matt made a nice little statement. I'll do a little bit of a long quote for you. Quote, For over 100 years, humans have looked to the stars and seen an extension of the sea. An inevitable destiny of manned voyages in space communicated through generations of storytelling. This is our collective vision of the future and something not to dismiss. Unquote. Take it from there.
So first of all, I want to thank Matt Hipple, my friend, not physically sitting next to me, but digitally, because he really did the heavy lifting on this article. Anything that is beautiful in the article is a result of his effort, and any mistakes are pretty much mine. But I think one of the big overarching points that we were trying to make through this article is really well captured in that that quote, because not only is there an essentially maritime flavor to the logical end state of manned exploration of space, but also there is an opportunity here with the American people. And I don't necessarily think that Space Force has been rolled out in the most adroit way. I think the rollout has been a little bit strange, and that's not to say that they haven't had an incredibly tough road to hoe, because obviously it hasn't been free of conflict, might be a good way to put it. But there is an opportunity with not just naval ranks, but being able to pick the best parts of culture to create a coherent force. But when Americans read science fiction or they think about the future as manned space exploration pertains, there's a naval underpinning, because when you think of ships or aircraft operating with large numbers of people on them, you're thinking far out into the future with different types of ships, different classes of spacecraft. And the further you get down that road, the more naval it becomes. So finding a way for Americans to identify with a naval culture, Space Force, also, it seems like it's pretty ripe, and it seems like it would connect a lot of aspects of our culture to Space Force itself. Over to Matt.
Yeah. So, first of all, it's great to be back. I have lost count of the number of times that you haven't had any ideas, so you've just kind of used me as the bottom of the barrel. And I appreciate, hey, being on your mind. the idea, so the Space Force is new, but it's not new in the minds of the American people, you know, people all over the world. And I think when there's a certain hubris that comes when we say, hey, we are doing this institutionally and bureaucratically for the first time, right? We've done these missions, but unifying them under a single service isn't something we've done or isn't something anyone else has done. That's new. But then you look back and say, but this is something that people have put significant amounts of thought into, if not entire lifetimes of thought into what man's future in space will be. Service, you know, if let's say it's back in the 1780s and you're standing up the Marine Corps for a second time, or you're standing up the Air Force, where just a second, Mati, turn that off. No, go take that back downstairs. My son's gonna drive his dump truck right through the middle of this interview.
It's a good reminder that you, these children are genetically related to you, so you're getting some
true.
Come up in a second.
But so you think the sort of structure of how this will be done is outside of the jurisdiction of just setting up a single service. If you're setting up a new army or a new navy or a new air force, you know, you're the first one on the ground. You're taking the traditions that have happened before, but you're not building something new. The Air Force was something new, but there were precedents set around the world, but you were building a conventional military force that is in combination with the other services, you know, this wing of national power, whereas the Space Force is something wholly different. Yes, it is a military service. It is part of the DOD. But by the very nature of what their ultimate mission will be, it is so far beyond the jurisdiction of any single generation of military officers or leadership. So, you know, the involvement in Congress, looking at fiction in the past and traditions of how we viewed space, all of these things are important because the Space Force, more than any other service, is our future. It will one day surpass the Air Force. It will surpass the Navy in importance. It will surpass the Army. It will surpass the Marine Corps. It will surpass all of them in its importance. And when you recognize that, you recognize that full scope of that vision. You can't say like, well, you know, let's just let them decide it on their own. Not because they're any knock against the Air Force officers involved, the dedicated people that have already gone over to start this project in the Space Force. It's just that this project is beyond all of us. It is so big, and it will define generations of not just military but American development. And you cannot leave that to any one group, even if it is the founders.
One of the I read an interesting piece by a guy named Brett Zeiernick, who took you to task a little bit, Matt, for your original suggestion that this was a mistake to give this thing to the Air Force and not to the Space Force and not to the Navy. He does point out, though, it was interesting, that some evidence that maintaining and defending space support to joint military operations is the maximum extent of space interest in the corporate philosophy of the Air Force. That's a quote from a piece that he wrote. I thought that was kind of interesting. Is the concern that the Air Force has kind of lacks the vision that the Navy would have as far as going places and do things differently than we do here on Earth? The Navy has more experience exploring the world or the universe.
Every service has vast and mind-boggling failures of vision due to everything from from the internal corporate interests to just the general churn of bureaucratic inertia. Every service has that. We all have our beefs, right? I'm Navy, so obviously I think the Navy's the best. The Air Force guys, they think the Air Force is the best. Everybody's got their side. I would never argue that because of corporatism or institutional failures, the Air Force is particularly flawed, a particularly flawed home of the Space Force. Because we can all imagine, we've all encountered institutional issues within the Navy that we know would come into play once, if the Space Force was over on the Navy side. It's more a question of, you know, function and culture. And you think about independent command at sea, months at a time, alone and unafraid, over the horizon. Okay, maybe there's an unrep ship out there for you, but general concept, you're out there, you're doing your own repairs, you're training your own crew, you have massive watch teams that stand watch for, you know, 8 hours, 8 hours or more in a day, just kind of doing nothing, floating through the great blue, waiting for that 1% of terror in the 99% of mundanity. You know, all of that kind of stuff translates directly to the future of space flight. Now, I recognize that the contemporary missions of the Space Force are primarily focused at maintaining space dominance in the support of the terrestrial services, its own domain of warfare, but right at the end of the day, we're where the people are, and the people aren't in space, and space is serving those interests. But that will change, and I think, or I worry, that some of the driving components of how folks want to build this force are driven, and you know, General Deptula, I understand what he's saying. You know, I see a man talking about an Air Force institution trying to execute contemporary mission sets. I understand that. But if we take a step further and recognize what the Space Force needs culturally to go into the next 100 years or 200 years, that involves a significant amount of Navy culture. But you know, back to the original question, there's no institution in DOD that does not have the corporate flaws that will suppress attempts to change things and do and execute new ideas. And that's just the nature of bureaucracy. So I would never say that the Air Force has some sort of particular original sin that makes it uniquely unable to face new challenges. That's just the ugly nature of doing business in vast institutions.
To tack on to the end of that, I'd like to reinforce Matt's point in that there is not some unique corporate culture that makes the Air Force inherently unable to handle this type of endeavor. I don't think that's a fair critique of what's going on. But I would like to bring up in the Space Force itself's interest, were they to brand themselves as they seem to be so far. I know the endeavor's pretty new, but if they were to brand themselves in such a way that there was little distinction in between them and the Air Force, which seems to be what General Deptula's thrust was, that the closer that they can maintain themselves next to Space Force or Space Force next to the Air Force, then the more influence you get over that force and the more access you have to that particular pot of money. So I think that there is an ingrained interest on the part of the Air Force in making sure that Space Force culture aligns as closely with theirs as possible. But there's a danger there in that were Space Force to simply become Air Force-like, then that's exactly what they would be. And it would probably end up being culturally a limiting factor. So there's a real important cultural point here that making yourself distinct has a big advantage when it comes to shaping your culture.
And Jack,
can I throw something real quick on the end of that?
Absolutely.
We mentioned this about the Navy and the Marine Corps in the article, but what advantage does the not just the Air Force, but the Space Force, all the services, what do they gain by an institution that so closely matches its parent? Nothing, right? If the Marine Corps was just a bunch of petty officers with M4s, wholly under the auspices of the Navy, how much change, how much thought, how much collaborative competition do you get out of that? You don't. And so the closer the Air Force is to exactly matching the Space Force is to closely matching the Air Force, what are you getting out of that? You've just made the Air Force a little bigger, and the Air Force doesn't gain anything. There's no independence of touch the way
Matt,
that we see between. Go ahead.
No, we just lost you for a minute. You faded out.
I'll shorten it. Yeah, the Space Force, none of the services gain much if the Space Force isn't culturally distinct from the Air Force. In much the same way that the Navy would gain nothing from a Marine Corps that was culturally exactly the same as the Navy. Then you say, well, why isn't it just the Navy, or why isn't it just the Air Force? Because it is something distinct. Just as if, let's say, the Space Force was under the Navy, it wouldn't just be OPNAV a million, or whatever you'd want to call the new Space Force OPNAV office. It would have to be something different, because that difference is what gets you all those different capabilities, all those different kinds of thought, all that kind of tactical and operational development.
Yeah, I think the points that you all raised and others have raised about the Navy Marine Corps model really is a great template to use if we're going to do this. But Jack, I wanted to pull a thread. I think, first of all, one of the things that I enjoyed about your article is in the greatest traditions of the U.S. Naval Service, we have some uppity helo guy and an over-caffeinated small ship LCS officer do a full frontal attack on an Air Force Lieutenant General's idea. That's, you know, talking about the naval culture, that's a beautiful thing that everybody should give a nice little U.S. Air Force golf clap to. But I think it's important to talk a little bit about General Deptula, not about him personally, but his position, and I think this is an important part of this discussion. It folds into conversations we've had on Midrats recently with Brian McGrath about how the Navy does a questionable job of messaging and explaining itself and its role in national security to the rest of the nation, whereas the Air Force, we actually used his name in the conversation, has an organization that retired Lieutenant General David DePula is the dean of. That's the Mitchell Institute for Aerospace Studies. And as people read Deptula's article, I think it's important for them to understand the mission of the organization that he leads. I will quote a little bit from their website. Quote, mission. This is for the Mitchell Institute for Aerospace Studies. The Mitchell Institute for Aerospace Studies is an independent, nonpartisan institute established to provide creative, insightful policy options that better empower our nation's leaders by bullet, informing national security debate, bullet, educating the aerospace power's unique role in securing America's global interest, and bullet, cultivating air-minded talent. And there's a little bit more after that that people can read if they want to go over to their website. And Jack, y'all made a little comment there in the third paragraph of the article about Deptula's very dismissive attitude about the naval culture and what is needed in the Space Force. Was that really the best path for Deptula to take, or does that in some ways signal the argument isn't as strong as others may think it has?
So with respect to the United States Air Force, I am armed with just enough knowledge to be dangerous, which is probably bad for the Navy and bad for the Air Force, because I went to Air Force flight school. I am married to an Air Force officer. My first duty station was an Air Force base. And my last duty station was an Air Force base. My last duty assignment was to an Air Force squadron in Afghanistan. So I'm about as Air Force an officer as you can get and still have naval aviator wings. So I come from a little bit of a unique perspective, having been able to work with the Air Force for basically a majority of my career. So I do think, and I don't want to speak about General Deptula personally because I don't think that that's really a great way to argue a point, but I hate to bring up the 15-knot quip that he made, which I think is a little disingenuous because the Air Force, as we noted in the article, the Navy, as we noted in the article, has not only we have satellites, not only do we have aircraft that are just as fast as Air Force jets, not only does the Navy have a very, very prestigious history in space exploration to include Neil Armstrong, naval aviator, Alan Shepard, naval aviator. So it's not like we're approaching this from a place of ignorance, which is a little bit of what he implied. So I think that that shows a little bit of insecurity on the part of this argument, because there are, by any stretch, by any measurement, there are some very, very important aspects of naval culture that could benefit Space Force going forward. And the example that I like to use is damage control. And Matt can probably talk far more in depth about that than I can, but there is no concept of damage control in the Air Force. You can't repair an aircraft in the air, so that's not even a thought. If you start to move forward into, again, the logical end state of what Space Force can be, you are going to need damage control, resupply at sea or in space, controlling sea lines or space lines of communication. So these are things that the Navy is familiar with. And so there are aspects, not all whole cloth our culture, but there are aspects of naval culture and naval strategic thinking that can be really, really important to the future of space exploration and Space Force. But I do, for just one second, want to put a plug in for the idea of Brian McGrath. And the Air Force through the Mitchell Institute is incredibly effective at messaging like this. So the Navy really, the hardest part about the U.S. Navy is that most of what we do is invisible to the eye. The mere fact that we are present doing freedom of navigation operations throughout the world, it's not sexy, it's not interesting, but we do it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Yet, that's really difficult to message. So having an organization that can effectively just simply talk about what the Navy does and why it's important going forward, I think is essential to not just the Navy, but the joint environment.
To, I think, a little bit of naval culture is, you could imagine the equivalent of the Mitchell Institute on the Navy side is USNI. Except USNI ends up being a bunch of people from completely different sectors of service and different interests, all arguing with one another all the time about different warfare areas. Whereas the Air Force does have a line of effort. You know, there is a front that it holds and it has a message, whereas we kind of are scattered all over the place. I think that's good. I don't think that I wouldn't want a Navy that has a organization that retirees kind of flow into to beat a single drum together. I don't think that nothing against the Mitchell Institute. I understand that the mission requirements and missions of the Air Force are different than the Navy's vast hodgepodge of things that we do forward deployed all across the planet. But I like it that way. I think it makes us better as an organization. But to the particular point about this, you know, 15 knot argument, I've encountered it amongst folks that I know that are on the Air Force side that have made it from JO to becoming one of, quote, them, unquote, just like me. But I think there is sometimes an assumption of bad faith. You look at another institution, maybe you've been in your institution long enough, and what you see from this legislation for the naval ranks, you see, oh, that's just the Navy trying to get a piece of the pie. Don't you guys think you're so cool? And I think that is not an unfair suspicion when you look at the flaws within your own organization. You know, sometimes people mirror and they say, I see the flaws in my institution. I know the bureaucratic maneuvering that we're executing, and I see this as some of the same. And that what the tone of our article we attempted to strike is, yes, we disagree with General Deptola, but this is not a screed against the Air Force. It's not a screed against him personally. It's trying to open that aperture so that people understand that, A, people are legitimately invested in this. You know, Jack and I, we're not corporate men. You know, we haven't gotten that high on the ladder yet. We don't have vested interests or programs that we're backing. We're just two dudes who think it's super important that the Space Force gets done right. And I think that's, for the most part, the people who are most passionate and most loud about this project, that's what they are. And I think that's probably what General Deptola is as well. And if you think another institution is pushing in on something and looking at it from that Machiavellian angle, yeah, maybe you get defensive. And I think some of that comes through in the article. It was against the institution. And we wanted to break that up a little.
Matt, I think we lost you. Going once, going twice. Jack, you want to pick up the baton?
No, I think that this is, if I were Space Force standing up the way we are, I would look at both the opinion of General Datula and the opinion of Matt and I and take them into account. I don't think that there's any one individual group that's going to have the monopoly on truth when it comes to how Space Force should be stood up. But I also think that no group should have a monopoly on truth as it comes to standing up, except for Space Force. And that, as not to go back to an old point, but if I were Space Force, I am already tied to the Air Force. I am under the Department of the Air Force, so I need to make myself as different, distinct, and new as possible as quickly as possible so that you just don't get subsumed into big Air Force writ large.
Yeah, I grew up in the Air Force. My dad was an Air Force officer. I lived on Air Force bases all my life. It's a different world. But the funny thing is that growing up that way, the Air Force was a part of the Army for so long, they broke off. You know, and when they broke off, they decided, you know, like the Brits did, they were going to take over all aviation. Then we had a huge fight. They had a huge fight with the Navy about that. And, you know, that ended really well. For everyone, because the Navy kept its air power and all that. But I'm just saying, these are all new organizations. When we get a new organization, there is that, I don't say it's a vacuum, but there is that attempt to define yourself as broadly as possible and get as much power for your organization as is available, I guess. General Datula makes some good points. I agree with you. I think you have to take both articles together. I guess the interesting thing, all he's saying, I mean, what he fundamentally was trying to say was, look, let the Space Command choose whatever ranks they want to use. Now, I happen to disagree with that because I think that, as Sal said at the start of the show, you get, you know, captain means something different when you've got a command of a vessel that's got a bunch of people on it. That's just the way it works. But more fundamentally, let's take a focus at what would the, in your view, Jack, I'll start with you since I don't know if we have Matt back yet, but in your view, what should the focus, the extraterrestrial focus of Space Force be as we go forward?
So it's hard to...
Can everyone
Matt, are you there?
Hey,
yeah,
we got Matt back. Hey, I don't know if my house is just a dead zone or what. I'm on my Wi-Fi. So I'll stop pacing around. Pacing is how I keep myself on the clock. What the advantage that the Air Force had when it was first stood up is the fact that there was a war in which its concepts were proven and it executed as the Army Air Corps. Vast campaigns with huge numbers of personnel that had to figure this thing out. And at the end, they said, this is something that we've got. This is a real service. This is something different. And let's charge forward. And they did it. And they were able to make that case, convincingly so, because we have an Air Force today. We're turning that on its head. You know. And so the question we have that we just asked is, well, what's that going to look like? Well, holy crap, you're starting an entire service and you don't even know what its end goal looks like, which is fine. That's absolutely fine because it's an important question to ask. You start with the rump. You know, the Space Force is about 5% the size of the Navy or Air Force, you know, roughly the same numbers. It's got they advertise about 16,000 members right now. That's so small. Like, that's incredibly small. So right now they're doing these rump missions that are the terrestrial support. But really, when you think of strategic lines of communication, trade, economic, exclusive economic zones, you have to think of, if we populated and commercialized space, either, you know, mining operations in the asteroid belt, which has trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars, more than the entire economy of the Earth today, in rare earth minerals. Talk about people being on Mars. All of these different assets and resources, the lines between them must be protected. Safety, navigational safety, the exact same thing that the Coast Guard does, that becomes a concern because, you know, okay, a sailboat hits a rock in San Diego Bay. All right, that's not good, but we can go get them. Somebody hit something that we didn't detect moving at high speed in an orbital we haven't used before. They're all dead. So all of these maritime navigational missions, not even before we even get to, like, how does naval reactors get involved in the power plant for a long range spacecraft? Because you know they are going to be there. Naval reactors, more than anyone else, is properly suited to operations in space because the amount of rigor that they put into a system with such an incredible amount of danger. I'd argue that like beyond anyone else in the Navy or anyone in the Air Force, they're the ones to go to. But before we even come up with those technical aspects of, okay, how are we driving around and doing all these things, we also have to think of that safety administrative support. What does that look like? How do we maintain and update digital charts for crafts that will go long ranges and not get updates from Earth? Those are all the kinds of things that will ensure a whole bunch of people don't die. The rest of it is really up to the people who design the spacecraft. And as fun it is, as it is to wax poetic about that, that is far beyond my ken. I'm sure, like I said, Naval Reactors probably has an opinion on that somewhere.
Yeah, Matt, I'd always thought that when you look at all the services combined, that the two places where you look at a culture that probably would translate the best to space, it would be exactly what you said, Naval Reactors and the Submarine Force. And, you know, when you look at the Air Force mission set, their ICBM crews also have something similar where they're all in one location. They have equipment to maintain. They have watches to stand. there's long moments of extreme boredom preparing for a moment that require moving forward. But I believe it was Jack that brought up earlier something I really haven't thought about, and something in the U.S. Navy we should be very proud of. Our culture when it comes to damage control and EMS on systems that if you don't do it right, you run out of stuff to breathe, I think is something that will translate well into the future. And, you know, we talk about these practical applications, and I wonder how much of this argument that has been made about Space Force isn't thinking long-term. This, when I really think dark, I go, how much of this is your standard issue, DC-centric battle of the POM cycle, where we are you know, the whole, like your title, service-centric parochialism will kill the Space Force. At the end, follow the money. How much of this is just how much of our wedge of the pie can we conserve and using Space Force to keep it under this rubric, can we use to get little slices out of the other services? A lot of this argument really seems to be focused on that short-term old-school thought. What do you think there, Matt?
Well, there's reality there. Some of the systems that we mentioned in our article talking about Aegis's BMD capability, Aegis Ashore, military-grade lasers being deployed on amphibs, all of this stuff are things that the Space Force, due to its mission set, is going to have a hand in. You know, we say service parochialism, it will kill the Air Force, but I understand that if you starve today, there is no tomorrow. So there's always going to be bureaucratic. There's going to be bureaucratic wrangling. But the problem is when all you're doing is bureaucratic wrangling for today, then you, at the end, you end up being like Joint Comm. or like you're the Spacecom of the 90s. You're just like, what? Why do you exist? What are you doing here? No one's quite sure why you exist. You haven't made yourself different. So a lot of this, yes, is everybody is looking at, because the budget's not going to increase commensurate with the, like, oh, we're just going to pull another, you know, another just piles of billions of dollars somewhere out of nowhere. It's going to be everybody else's money. And it's going to be everybody else's programs, and the Space Force is going to have a hand in it. But what that means is it's the prisoner's dilemma, right? Everybody can rat on everybody else, and this thing's going to be a train wreck. Or we can kind of transcend some of those barriers and try to do this right using the systems we have so nobody gets shot in the neck and build something that works for everybody, and then eventually something that we're all going to end up working for. That should be the goal, and that's hard, right? When you're sitting in a cube at the Pentagon, and you've got the as you say, green eye shade out. You don't really get much past that green eye shade, but you have to if you're going to build a new service. And if you don't, be it the Air Force not playing nice, be it the Navy not playing nice, someone's going to lose. And even if you're playing a really keen short-term game, you could be the long-range loser. And I think people just need to be – they just need to be mindful of that. And, you know, who knows? In another 10 years, we could have just totally bunked this up, and all of this churn today, all these hopes for the future, just end up with, you know, another joint comp, a service that just gets folded back into the Air Force. Because we didn't approach it with enough of the vision of the future to give it that escape velocity.
I can't make that better than what Matt said. I think being able to look past the green eye shades is probably the biggest key. To not just taking the idea of Space Force going forward and its possible futures seriously, but getting past, you have to think outside a couple of budget cycles. I know that that's nearly impossible in the Pentagon right now, but it's so vitally important to the future of Space Force advantageous to say the least.
Should Space Force have been stood up as a service, like, you know, Navy or Air Force as a completely separate branch?
That's difficult. I think that going too retrograde with that conversation isn't going to be useful, because here we are. Space Force is under the Department of the Air Force. And now we need to do everything we can to make it as good as it can be. And maybe that being stood up under the institution of the Air Force is good, because here we are, Jack and Matt, talking about why it should be different and why it should be distinct. So it becomes a very powerful argument about why we should take a strong look at what culture we want to create. And by virtue of having that conversation, it forces us to think about our own cultures.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. You know what I thought. At one point, I was the standard bearer of Space Force in the Navy. But, you know, as Jack and I talked about this topic and we thought about General Deptula's article, there's a certain advantage, right? The same reason, okay, the Marine Corps is different in the Navy. What's the advantage of having just more Navy in the Navy? It's definitely maritime. It definitely involves naval components. It's going to involve systems from our service. But there is some forced, violent, bureaucratic, and cultural change and thinking that has to be done, because it's not under the Navy. Maybe that's the easy answer, and that would definitely be a super cool answer to me, the guy who believes in the Navy. But I would say, if I had my druthers, if we had to go back, definitely better for it to be its own standalone service.
Matt, I think we lost you again. Oh, we did. While Matt tries to stand in a corner to get a good reception, Jack, let me roll this way. I teased in a couple of the introductory comments about talking about Dune because I know what a big fan of Dune you are. I don't know if Dune will I like you. Before I get into my actual question, I share your enthusiasm that the remake of Dune will bring some justice to the book because the previous Dune movie, not so much. It's a piece of art that kind of stands alone, but it's not Dune, so we're all optimistic. However, part of what we're talking about here is a story that literature and art has established as a foundation for what is, sounds like a cliche, but it's true, the final and unending frontier that will be as technology and desire has us move off this planet to explore elsewhere. And when I look at fiction that I think are good data points to look at structures and where they might be going, I always go back to a movie that was so far ahead of its time that it's off the charts. In 1968, 2001, A Space Odyssey. And when I watched it with my kids when they were in junior high and high school, my oldest was like, why did we get here in 2001? Which gave me a great opportunity to pontificate about budget priorities. But anyway, maybe 2001 should have been 2051. But that and the more modern series, The Expanse, are good things to look at. If they're not movies or series, Jack, what are those pieces of fiction that you think if people were trying to get hold of in the near term, which a quarter century maybe, a quarter to 50 years, of the direction Space Force would be needed, what comes to mind for you?
So twofold, Sal, and as much as I want to plug Dune, I'm going to have to put that aside. It's a fantastic book. Everyone should read it. However, and you might be surprised by this answer, but the first one, very, very obviously to me, is the Honor Harrington series. I think that there is an incredible number of lessons as to what the future could look like, how we have to think strategically about these problems. And the other one I'm going to give you, and this is going to seem a little retrograde, but I promise I'm going somewhere, is Master and Commander. Because I think that if you could pick and choose the best parts of culture from the different services. And this just came out recently in a study that naval officers are willing to take more risk at higher levels of command. The idea and the culture ingrained in the Navy of command by description as opposed to command by prescription is vitally important to the future of Space Force. Once you leave Earth's orbit, communications become more difficult. You're going to spend long periods of time isolated from a command structure. You have to begin making decisions just based on physics. You have to begin making decisions on your own again. So instead of looking way far forward, if you look at a series like Master and Commander, where you are basically handed a letter that says, go make war on the Americans in the Pacific, those are probably going to be more akin to the orders that Space Force is going to receive when they are out on their own. So the aspects of culture that we can draw from those lessons of command by description as opposed to prescription is so important to that possible future.
Yeah, I really think. Can anyone hear me? Am I back?
We got you.
Great. Yeah, no, Commander's intent, mission command, all of those things become vitally important on, and just to illustrate some of that, because I'm glad Jack brought up Master and Commander while I was struggling with my frickin' connection over here, because that's perfect. You're, for long periods of time, away from everyone without guaranteed communication. And as a difference between the Air Force and the Navy, that is one aspect of how of commanding officers are trained, at least to expect and think, that is not necessarily a component of Air Force training in the sense of execution over weeks, if not months on end. Right? There's still mission command when you go up in the air. I understand that much. But when you're talking about the scale of time where depending on what time of year it is between Venus or Mars or any other number of orbital objects that people may have to go to or explore or execute enforcement actions on or send personnel to, that's really a – that's there you go. It's all those olden days sailing films where people are on their own making their own calls – far away from the Puzzle Palace and everybody here at Mission Command on Earth.
One of the great aspects of the Navy was the orders that used to read, go to X and act in the best interest of the United States. You can't get a better set of orders than that, I don't think. But let's talk about what's actually going on now. We've got Elon Musk and SpaceX and a bunch of other people getting ready to go out into outer space and do things, capture asteroids they think are heavily laden with various kinds of metals, gold, and all that stuff. You guys are young enough. Is this exciting time for you? Is this something that y'all are looking forward to with eagerness as we really do begin to explore outer space beyond the moon and do new and exciting things?
Sorry, Matt, I'm going to jump on this. I think any of you that know me know that I am probably one of the most difficult skeptics of innovation, culture, the idea of the overpromise of technology. I still am completely with Sal when it comes to ideas like the high-frequency radio and why that could and should be important for the future. So am I excited? Yes, absolutely, because the future possibilities, and this is the exact point that we wanted to make in the article, are limitless. And the comparison between the two pieces couldn't really be more stark, and one is distinctly terrestrial in scope, whereas ours – The worst thing that you could say is that we maybe are thinking too far ahead and that we're a little pie in the sky. But I think that that's where everybody should be. We should be excited about the possibilities presented. If this is the way we are going to go, if Space Force is going to be cemented and that's the future, then we should think as far ahead as possible about what we can do, how we can shape it, and how it can become important to national security, but also the spirit of human exploration.
Yeah, I think back to the SpaceX launch this year, and during that beautiful moment where we thought things would open up for just a little bit, I went out with another friend of mine to grab a beer because finally the restaurants had opened back up and some of the restrictions had lifted just a little bit. And I look at the TV and my heart just sinks because I had no idea the launch was that day. And I was like a little kid again, just that sense of awe that this is American capitalism, you know, our national, this is our zeitgeist going up into space beyond all of these terrestrial issues that we have. Like, this is really this moment of success. And my two kids are, you know, throwing random toys at them on the back at home. And I'm not with them watching this, even though that they wouldn't even understand. You know, it'd be like, why am I watching a guy in a tiny room for a few minutes? Oh, look, there's a cool robot. And, you know, not putting them both together. But I am so excited. If you don't believe in the future, you know, what do you believe in? And every generation thinks that they're just on the cusp of the next big thing, and good, like, pursue it. Maybe it is us this time. Maybe this is the great first wave up into space. And it's good that we're doing this project now. Better that the Space Force be preemptive, something that we do for the defense of our interests in space now, in to deter those future conflicts, than something we do afterward, after we've made a mistake or after we've already had to fight something that we weren't totally prepared for and didn't fully understand. We won't be totally prepared and we don't fully understand it, but, you know, like they say, planning is nothing and planning is everything. And this is that planning is nothing that happens beforehand that gives us somewhere to start. And I'm just glad to be here. I'm excited to be a part of it, even if I'm just on the sidelines.
You know, Matt, I had to grin a little bit when you talked about as a little kid, because one of the reasons I get real excited about this is, as a kid, I grew up with my mom and my dad and my sisters getting woken up in the middle of the night so we could go outside and watch Saturn V launches. Daytime launches were neat. Nighttime launches were awesome. And, you know, I bookend that, and I was driving back from CENTCOM in 07 to go visit my parents. And lo and behold, as I was driving to the Northeast, I watched STS-117, the space shuttle, take off that afternoon. And I didn't even know. And I pulled off the side of the road and just watched it go. It was just, it was great. But I think the future here is coming, and it's coming in the right direction. But your article and what we've talked about here is helping to set that foundation. And as much as I thoroughly enjoy and have an exaggerated sense of the importance and heft of our best millennial officers in mid-grade positions with a knife in their teeth attacking retired Air Force general officers, we need more people in the argument. We need more people in the discussion. If you had the power to get a cattle prod to the backside of people in Congress and senior civilian or military positions to engage in the argument, where are those levers of power or those buttons of influence you would really like to see to join the conversation in one way or another to kind of build or to work in parallel with the argument that you and Jack made in your article?
I know people think this will go wrong because sometimes two heads may be better than one, but a few hundred heads is not an improvement. But based on what the Space Force is, and based on who has the control of the purse strings, there's a lot of veterans in Congress. There's a lot of people who this really goes beyond the partisan divide. There's so many partisan issues. America in space is not a partisan issue. I would want to see Congress be a unifying component of this debate, because it's not something you can get angry about. It's not something that's going to end up on a bunch of talk shows and people spitting venom at one another about. It's space. It's the coolest thing. And if that's something that could bring people together, and if people come together, if Congress gets involved, that helps push this along and make people also play nice, because now dad's in the room with you, and it's not just mudslinging between different institutions. You have this real opportunity to engage with the people's house on something that represents more than any one military institution. And I think, you know, they're already there. The House of Representatives is already involved. And in a constructive way, not a micromanagement way. And I understand the fears I know where they're coming from in the General Deptula article. I understand those. But this is the Space Force. This is America's – if America is to have, you know, another 300 years, this is our face militarily into the future. And it's it is critical that the American people and their representatives mold this to properly represent us and what we want to be. And I think that improves politics in general. I think that improves the way that the institution is built. I don't think anyone's going to come in there with an agenda and be like, I'm Congressman so-and-so, and I really think that this particular widget is something you should wear on your hat, you know, like the Space Force episode where they're all having all the issues with the uniforms. I don't think we're going to end up with something like that. I think people are passionate. I think that, you know, people in politics are hungry for something that's just not emotionally draining constantly all the time. And this is a unifying topic that could really bring people together and kind of force, I think, some of our service parochialism to the side. If Congress gets involved and in a constructive way, you know, that leaves an opening that creates a mandate for all the other services to also play nice and get involved. That's what I would like to see. Just more positive, constructive political engagement of something that we can all just get behind.
I absolutely echo that sentiment. I think that positive congressional input on this subject is fantastic, because you cannot get service parochial when, as Matt said, dad's in the room. You sometimes, in my case, previously quite literally. So you cannot. It makes it harder to drag up some of the cultural baggage associated with acquisitions and with congressional oversight, I think, or not just oversight, but active congressional engagement. Then you have a referee, and a pretty impartial one, actually. But the other group of people I would really want to hear from now and as Space Force has stood up is the junior officers and junior enlisted members of Space Force. What do you want to see become reality, I think, is incredibly important. I'm pretty sure that if I were to sit down with the head of Space Force right now, I could probably dial in pretty quickly what he wants. However, I want to sit down with a Space Force, hopefully lieutenant, at some point, and sit down and just say, what do you want to see? What do you want this to look like? And with the limitless possibilities presented, what aspects of culture from different services do you want to take to help make your coherent whole? So try to keep it laconic there.
Well, you guys have done a great job today. Before we let you go, is there more you guys are going to write individually or together on Space Force? And if so, when we're going to see it? And otherwise, anything else we should be looking out for from you?
I don't know, Jack. Have you been keeping our publishing schedule? I haven't talked to our agent yet.
I have to say that working with Matt in particular, I have thoroughly enjoyed. Matt is an incredible writer, and we both approach topics like this from two very different but also two very similar perspectives. So I don't have in 2 weeks we're going to publish another piece on the Space Force, but not only do I feel incredibly fortunate to be involved in the conversation, but I would love to write more with Matt. So hopefully we can shake something out, provided our agent says it's okay.
It really depends. You know, it depends on the next article. Who's writing the next one? That the only reason Jack and I got involved was because General Deptula wrote an article, and that article got us involved, and you know William Shatner himself also got involved, and we followed in that wake. So I suppose the next time that we would write individually as a group, I'd love to write with Jack again, is when the next wave of this discussion comes out in public. And I'm hoping that this conversation amongst those kind of four articles, including Brent as well, I thought his article was incredibly passionate That whole milieu, hopefully that drives more discussion. And, you know, discussion begets discussion, and hopefully we have more to jump off in the future.
Well, gentlemen, as always, it's been a pleasure. The two of y'all are great guests by yourself, but having you both on together was fun. And for our listeners, we do this. We're not at the same table. We don't have video where we're looking at each other. But it was a great hour. I think y'all showed a great example of engaging in a conversation, and hopefully it'll encourage others to follow your lead. And I look forward to the next opportunity to having y'all on Midrats.
Anytime, Sal. I love being here.
My pleasure. This is great.
And thanks, everybody, who joined us today. And until next time, I hope y'all have a great Navy day. Cheers.
Maloney wants to marry me, and so leave the Strand and Piccadilly, or you'll be to blame. For love has fairly drove me silly, hoping you're the same.